It's been exactly 6 weeks since a Wayne County woman went missing. Jeanette Ciaramella vanished from the home she shared with her boyfriend in Clyde on November 27th.
A disappearance, the sergeant tells me, is now considered to be suspicious.
And what officers in charge of the case think happened to her?
Somebody has to know something. Somebody just needs to come forward.
The smallest detail could be what it takes to blow this case open.
On November 27th, 2018, 31-year-old Jeanette Ciaramella disappeared from her home in the small town of Clyde in upstate New York. She had no vehicle, no phone, no wallet, and not a single person living nearby in her quiet and friendly neighborhood witnessed her coming or going. Three years have passed since that day, but the investigation seems to have hit a dead end, with no updates from law enforcement on whether they are any closer to finding her than they were on the day she went missing. It's as if she vanished into thin air. But while it may seem that way on the surface, a trace can always be found if the investigation digs deep enough. Someone must know something, right? My name is Amanda Vreeland, host of Unconvicted. This is the investigation into the disappearance of Jeanette Ciaramella. Please be aware that this episode contains content that may be alarming or triggering to some listeners. Please check the show notes for more details and resources, and take care of yourself. Before diving in, I just want to say how blown away I have been by the response to this podcast so far. Thank you so much to everyone that has taken the time to listen and share. You play a critical role in bringing Jeanette's case closer to resolution by doing those small but significant things. The door to answers opens just a little wider every time you say her name and share her story. I've seen a lot of comments from those who either knew Jeanette personally or knew of her through mutual friends and social circles. A few of you posted about personal experiences that led you to learn about certain aspects of her case and the investigation. And some even recalled hearing rumors about what may have happened to Jeanette. Even rumors are better than silence in a case like this, because at least that means it isn't being forgotten. Speaking to all of you that have something to share, and to those who might not think they have anything to share at all, I want you to imagine the life of Jeanette Ciaramella as a finished puzzle with hundreds of pieces. The pieces are all connected and where they belong, forming a beautiful picture of her kindness, love, friendship, and family. When she disappeared, that puzzle was smashed, and the pieces were scattered around to every place she had ever stepped foot and distributed to every person to ever cross paths with her in any way. The pieces alone seem worthless until they are brought to light, shared, and collected to be put back together. I believe that some of you listening to this right now may hold those pieces to Jeanette's puzzle. There isn't a single piece of information out there about Jeanette that is too insignificant to share. You may know something that seems like nothing. You may know something you assume everyone knows. You may know something that may not even have anything to do with Jeanette at first glance. But those pieces might just be the last few that investigators are still missing, and they need them in order to put this case back together. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Jeanette Ciaramella, please contact the Wayne County Sheriff's Department at 315-946-9711. In July of 2019, my family and I traveled to Clyde, New York to visit with our family there and I had the opportunity to sit down with Marcus Lee to talk about Jeanette. Marcus was Jeanette's boyfriend at the time of her disappearance and was also the one to report her missing to the police after not hearing from her for 2 days.
Do you live here by yourself?
Jeanette was living with Marcus in his home at the time she went missing, and it was reportedly the last place that she was seen by anyone. I couldn't help but replay that detail in my head as I made my way through the entrance of that very home with Marcus.
Marcus Lee, 5 New York.
How old are you?
29.
How long have you lived in Clyde?
All my life, except for 4 years when I was in the Marine Corps.
Marcus enlisted with the Marines in 2009 and ended up being stationed in South Carolina for 4 years as a bulk fuel specialist. This was the only time in his life that he lived outside of Clyde. Marcus told me that he and Jeanette had very similar backgrounds in that regard. Jeanette had apparently grown up in that area too, in the neighboring town of Wolcott. She went to North Rose Wolcott High School and graduated in 2004. She moved out of state after high school and enlisted in the Army as a combat medic, but eventually made her way back to her hometown just like he did. Marcus was currently working as an electrician for Joe Tavano Electric, but had also been working as a volunteer firefighter with the Clyde Fire Department when he and Jeanette were together. Unfortunately, the stress and heartache of her disappearance really took a toll on him, and he had to step back from his firefighter duties.
So are you currently an active first responder?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I stepped back there for a while. I just couldn't do it. I tried and tried and tried, and I just couldn't do it. And I finally started getting back in. I was worried that the guys weren't going to respect me. And I'm an electrician. I work with a lot of different, like, live voltages all the time. And if mine isn't right, I can't do my job. And that's another thing. Like, you know, this whole thing struggled. Like, I'm lucky I still have a job. I just couldn't do it.
I asked Marcus to tell me about when he and Jeanette first met and when they started dating.
It was like the end of winter, spring era of last year when we first met. And, you know, we just kind of hit it off.
How'd you guys meet?
Facebook.
Really?
Yeah, like I requested her, and then she messaged me because she thought I looked familiar. And then we got to talking, and then later on that day, she brought me food to work. And then we didn't talk for a week because we were both kind of like, you know, waiting on the other one. And then finally I messaged her, and then we, you know, just hit it off. We officially moved in like together. Like she was staying here for pretty much the entire time that we were together, but she didn't officially move in until, like, middle of October. That's when she finally brought all of her stuff.
Tell me a bit about her.
She's just got a big heart. Always tried to see the good in everybody. Like, no matter who it was. You know, we were trying to start a family. And, you know, that night before, like, we had a great conversation with each other about, like, you know, what our future was going to hold. And, you know, just everything was just great. And next morning, I see that tell her goodbye to go to work, and all of a sudden, you know, phone call. If I heard from her, and last time I heard from her was like 9:10 in the morning. And that's another thing. She was combat medic in the Army, so it's like I know that she was kidnapped. She put up a fight, but I think that if anything, somebody tricked her and she got set up. I still hold it a little bit against myself. Like, it sucks because I mean, thought I could protect her, and here I come home and she's nowhere to be found, and then I wait 2.5 days and then finally go down and make a missing persons report. I waited that long only because she has, like, you know, disappeared for a day, but even when she, like, you know, doesn't tell me she's going someplace or doesn't tell me where she's at, she still contacts me and she finds a way to call me and tell me, like, I'm okay, like, I'll be home whenever. But that day, nothing. That just, everything was out of normal, like out of the norm.
It is critically important to mention something here for every single person listening to this right now. There is a dangerous myth that has been floating around for a long time about how we are supposed to handle the situation when someone we know goes missing. There are so many people that believe that there is some policy in place stating that you have to wait a certain number of hours or days before you can report someone as missing to the police, especially adults. Unfortunately, that non-existent policy has even been fueled by actual law enforcement in some cases when trying to file a missing person report. But please, hear me now and carve it in deep. You do not wait. You do not sleep on it. You do not play it cool. And you do not let anyone tell you that you're overreacting. You file that report immediately, no matter what, and you advocate for the health, safety, and well-being of your loved one like their life depended on it, because you know what? It really might.
Every time I think about it, none of it makes sense to me. Right after Thanksgiving, she disappeared. She was supposed to be here for my, like, making lunch. I was at work, you know, and I came home. She's not here. And
you guys had plans for you to come home that day from work?
Yeah, I was working local, and she said she was going to make me lunch, and my lunch breaks are usually at noon.
Was that pretty regular
for
you guys? And then you came home, and she just wasn't here?
Well, she was supposed to go with a mutual friend of ours to go take care of an older gentleman that, you know, she was a certified nurse.
So. Oh, really? Okay, I didn't know that.
Marcus explained that Jeanette was a certified nurse and had been assisting a mutual friend of theirs on a regular basis, an older gentleman that had trouble getting around on his own due to some health issues. She told Marcus that she helped him by doing things around the house, running errands, and administering medications for him. Out of respect for this individual, I am choosing not to refer to him by his real name at this point in my reporting. I will be referring to him as Nick. No one mentioned or heard from on this podcast is being accused of having any involvement at all with Jeanette's disappearance. And please remember that there has not yet been any publicly named suspect or person of interest by law enforcement for her case.
Like cash under the table, and she used to live across from the guy before she, like, you know, met me.
Was that like a decent ways from here, or was that pretty close?
It was South Butler.
Nick lives in South Butler, which is about a 20-minute drive from Marcus's house in Clyde. Before moving in with Marcus, she had lived across the street from this gentleman. According to Marcus, the plan for that morning was for Nick to drive over to Marcus's house around 9 a.m. to pick Jeanette up and bring her back to his home so that she could help him with the things he needed.
Did you ever talk to him?
Yeah. Well, he told me that she got a phone call, like, via Facebook off my iPad, and she asked him to come back in, like, 15, 20 minutes to pick her up because she had to do something, and then he knew that, well, her 15, 20 minutes was never 15, so it was like an hour and a half. So he figured, well, he'd just leave and then she'd call him when she was ready. Well, he never got a phone call. About 11 o'clock, he calls me and asks if I heard from her. And I didn't. And then somebody, or she went, some, I don't know where she went from there. He doesn't know.
So here's what the timeline looks like so far from Marcus. He and Jeanette had a great night filled with meaningful conversations about their future together and went to bed sometime between 10 p.m. and midnight. They both slept through the night and woke up in the morning at approximately 6 a.m. to start getting ready for their day. Marcus kissed Jeanette goodbye and left for work at around 6:45 a.m. They both planned to be back home by noon to have lunch together. Nick told Marcus that he arrived at Marcus's house to pick Jeanette up at 9 a.m. as planned, but as she was about to depart with him, she suddenly received a call on the iPad from an unknown person and told Nick that she needed to take care of something first before she could leave. She told Nick that she'd only be about 15 to 20 minutes, but Nick guessed that it would probably take longer than that, so he returned home to wait for her to let him know that she was done with whatever she was doing and ready for him to come back to get her. 20 minutes went by with no word from Jeanette, then another, and another. And by 11 a.m., he was concerned enough to call Marcus and ask if he had heard from her.
All the pictures that I have, like, you know, posted as her missing were literally minutes before she left my house with my iPad and, like, lost Wi-Fi signal. Like, that's, like, the last photo she sent me. It was weird that she sent me all the photos like that, though, too. I don't know how nobody knew, nobody saw anything.
Somebody had to have seen something.
Yeah. Well, then look at how many neighbors usually always, if they see something suspicious going on at my house or they see a car, like, they call me and tell me I'll be at work or whatever.
Right. Like, or people will just talk about it.
Yeah.
Marcus thought it was a little odd for Jeanette to have sent him all of those photos of herself that morning, and I did too. I was quick to overthink it, like maybe she felt like she was in danger, or would be at some point that day and wanted him to know exactly what she was wearing and what she looked like. But after Marcus described the timeline of her last known movements, something else about those photos popped out to me. Marcus received all four photos from Jeanette between 9:07 a.m. and 9:13 a.m., and one of the pictures that she sent him that morning was a selfie of her in a car with her seatbelt on. I asked Marcus about it to see if he knew whose car she was in, and Marcus was told and strongly believes that it was Nick's car. This may be overthinking again, but if that's true, that potentially would mean that when Nick arrived to pick up Jeanette at 9 a.m., she actually got in the car, fastened her seatbelt, and took a selfie. And he probably would have had to park close enough to the house for the iPad to still be connected to Wi-Fi when Jeanette received that mysterious call. And at some point, between taking the selfie, receiving the call, communicating with Nick that she needed 15 minutes to take care of something, and getting out of the car to go back inside, she was able to send Marcus these photos for him to have received them all by 9:13 a.m. Not to suggest that this series of events is impossible, but it does seem weird. For anyone interested in seeing those photos, if you haven't already, you can find them posted in the show notes for this episode.
I think that she had there's an app that you can get your own phone number. To this day, I don't know who called her. Nobody knows.
She took the iPad.
Yeah. Because she was going to, you know, want to stay in communication with me because there's free Wi-Fi spots all over the place. You know?
She left everything else here.
Yeah. I still got an entire closet full of her stuff.
Keys.
My door, like, she left my house like she was coming back in 15, 20 minutes. My doors were unlocked, lights still on, you know. She just had what she was wearing when she left. That was it.
Did she bring her wallet? Or a purse, or...
Yeah.
She took that with her?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's what I told her. It's like, you know, she had her wallet, but she didn't have an ID or anything. Like, her ex-husband decided that he wanted to take that from her.
So she didn't have an ID at all?
No. That's why I would try to, like, never let her leave without me, because, I mean, I don't trust people.
And if something happened, she would have no way of being identified.
Exactly.
Her ex-husband took it away?
Yeah, he, like, took, like, her whole wallet. Well, I don't know what... She had a wallet, but I don't know what was really in it. I never went through it. Like, she told me that he had her ID and bank card.
Was this, like, pretty recent before you guys met?
No, it was, like, a couple months before everything happened.
Oh, okay. Like, he, like, came while you guys were together.
Well, she went over to go pick up her daughter, and then... They got into it. And, like, every time that I would show up there, like, the guy would chase us off the house.
How old is she?
She's 7 now.
What's her name?
Lila.
Lila? What is her perspective on this entire situation?
She just knows that she's missing.
How often does she see her daughter?
All the time. Her mother was taking care of Lila.
So was she supposed to see her that day or pick her up?
We were going to see her... later on in the week.
Okay. So it wasn't weird that she didn't go to her mom's house or anything? Okay. So she took the iPad, though. Did they do any more investigating on that?
I gave them all the serial numbers and everything. Stupid me, I forgot to turn to find my iPad app on.
For those who aren't familiar with Apple devices, what Marcus is referring to is an application designed by Apple called Find My, that is built into almost all of their products, like iPhones, iPads, and Mac computers. Its purpose is to allow you, as the owner of the device, to track and locate those items, even if the devices are offline. But there's a catch. You do have to agree to enable this feature on your device, and there are many people who choose not to out of concern for their privacy.
Was it logged into your account?
Yeah, but because it didn't ever connect back to Wi-Fi, it never pinged it on them. I talked with Google with Apple about all that, and they said they told me the same thing, but because of privacy concerns and stuff like that, like there's a whole, like, the guy was on the phone with Apple for probably 5 hours, and he was trying everything he possibly could, and his, you know, his manager was, look, like, we can't do anything. Like, we can, but we can't, just because of...
Was it the police that was on the phone with them?
No, it was me. But then I told them...
Even though it was your iPad?
Yeah. I don't really know the whole reason. It blows my mind that, you know, I couldn't do anything.
Apple provides documentation on their site for U.S. government and law enforcement to reference when faced with a situation like this, where an urgent request for data, like last known location, messages, calls, etc., may need to be made and obtained as soon as possible. Apple defines these as emergency requests because they are an exception to the rule that law enforcement needs to obtain a warrant for the data request. But in order for the request to be honored, law enforcement must really emphasize the need for this data as a true emergency. Apple's documentation on the matter states,
"The Electronic Communications Privacy Act, ECPA, governs the authorized disclosure of data, including customer content, by Apple. An exception to the requirement that government or law enforcement obtain a search warrant for customer content is provided by ECPA in situations in which the case involves an emergency. Under this law, Apple is permitted, but not required, to voluntarily disclose information, including contents of communications and customer records, to a federal, state, or local governmental entity, if Apple believes in good faith that an emergency involving imminent danger of death or serious physical injury to any person requires such disclosure without delay."
I was very curious to know whether or not this was something law enforcement requested from Apple after Jeanette disappeared. I asked Marcus if law enforcement was keeping him up to date on where they were in the investigation. At least more so than they were with the media, I hoped.
Do you usually get updates from anybody on the investigation?
I used to, but I don't think that... I more or less feel like it's gone cold. Nobody said anything to me. Like, well, the sheriff's took over the case now. And that's another thing, is the chief of police, Jeff Shields, had a vendetta against the sheriff's department and refused from day one to let them join in the investigation. Because when Lyons used to have a police department, everybody in Lyons was supposed to be able to go to the sheriff's department. Like, once it dissolved, they were promised spots there. But they still had to take the civil service exam like every other sheriff has to. Well, he didn't think that he had to do that. And that's why he had a personal vendetta against the sheriff.
Marcus was referring to the Wayne County Sheriff's Department when he said the sheriff's. From what I can tell, Jeanette's case was handed over from Clyde PD to the Wayne County Sheriff's Department following the search of that 50-acre property they did back in December. All of the towns and villages that I've mentioned so far from the articles that cover Jeanette's case are located in Wayne County, including Clyde, of course, which is where Marcus reported Jeanette missing from. At that time, the man Marcus mentioned, Jeff Shields, was the chief of police with Clyde PD. But before he joined the Clyde Police Department, he was working for another department in the nearby village of Lyons. Well, the Wayne County Sheriff's Department also happened to be located in Lyons, and in 2014, the residents voted to dissolve the local police department to fight skyrocketing tax rates, and the Wayne County Sheriff's Department would double up and put in some overtime to cover the loss. Marcus believes that Shields expected to be transferred from Lyons PD to the Sheriff's Department after Lyons dissolved, and believes Shields was frustrated with the Sheriff's Department when that didn't happen. He joined Clyde PD after that, and Marcus fears that the personal feud may have impacted the handoff of Jeanette's case.
I used to have the cops always watch my house. Like before this, I had them watch my house. I'd drive by. But I was always in good standards with the Clyde PD. Always. And this whole thing went down. And Jeff Shields, one of the eight, like, pretty much pinned it on me. Brian Ritchie knew I was innocent because I did nothing to help the guy, you know?
Brian Ritchie is another officer with Clyde PD.
I know he did as much as he possibly could with the resources that he had. But at the end of the day, the person who makes the final call is chief, you know? He can only do as much as he's letting him do. He just, I don't know, just, I feel like he thinks that I did it.
So he should stick it with that.
Yeah. And I feel like that's why the other cop that was going around saying it was because that's what he's hearing from his superiors. You know?
Do you know Shields? Do you have a history with him?
I've talked to him a couple of times here and there before this whole incident, and we never had a problem with him. And up until, like, you know, everything went down, and then I went out of my way to try to help them, and then they started accusing me. That's kind of when he won't even acknowledge me anymore. Like, I tried. Won't even look at me. Go see my trouble. Won't even look.
They have to go through an investigation.
Yeah.
It almost seems like they didn't even go through really any of the process of investigating you. Did they do that to you?
It was 3 weeks later. And it was only because I got into her Facebook account. I was able to hack her Facebook account to be able to read messages and stuff. And, like, there was no other message.
Just by, like, getting her password?
Yeah. I was able to work my magic and figured it out. I don't know how. To this day, I don't know how I did it, but I was able to reset it, and I did it. But she, the only messages that were there were the ones of me being pissed off that she didn't show up. Like, you know, where the are you? Like, they sounded angry, and they used that against me that she sounds like she was in an abusive relationship. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that if your wife, your girlfriend doesn't show up when she's supposed to be there, I'm pretty sure you're going to call her. And if you don't answer, you're going to leave a very nasty voicemail. I'm like, but they didn't, when they brought me in, they brought me in under false pretenses. They told me they wanted to go over some information, like, that they had found. And so I'm sitting there thinking that, like, you know, they're going to, like, run stuff by me and see what. No. I go in there and they don't even read me my rights, first off. You're going to accuse me of shit. I'm supposed to have my rights read to me. Didn't read me my rights. And then they start playing everything that I said. And I said to them, like, if I was guilty, why would I leave that on there? I'm like, I broke into this Facebook for you. And I gave you the password. I broke into her email account for them. Like, well, then they threw all the rumors that, you know, people had told them and Clyde what they'd seen me doing the night she, or the day she disappeared. I could have a lawsuit against them. That's what I said to him. Like, I incriminated myself enough, like, you know, just because I wanted them to know that I'm innocent. I just want to find her. I was literally nowhere. I was in Seneca Falls when she first disappeared. And then I was up in Camillus, an hour away, until 6:30 that night.
Just for reference, Seneca Falls is approximately 25 minutes from Marcus's home, and Camillus is approximately an hour from his home, like he said.
I finally gotten more or less not over it, but I can cope with it better than what I was. I wanted to bust down so many doors when everything first went down. I kept my cool because I was just hoping that police were doing their job. I put so much faith in them. I just feel like I, you know.
You got let down?
Yeah. He said the sheriffs took it over, and the investigators, like, I had to go in and pretty much start from scratch because they pretty much told me that Clyde botched the investigation. And they were like, you gotta pretty much start over. And so I had, like,
which is almost impossible to do.
Yeah. They took and dumped all the information off my phone, and, you know, I sat there for probably 3 hours. And luckily, like, the female investigator, she's friends with my mom, so they kind of, like, it was more comforting. And that's, like, how I felt, like, when I was talking to them. It more sounded like they were trying to go for drug busts.
Starting from there would be a good way to go. Well, so you can figure out everything else after.
I even told them straight up, I'm like, if you guys need like somebody to like go and infiltrate these places, I'm like, I'd do it. Like, I wear a wire, I don't give a shit, you know, just trying to find her.
So I asked Marcus if he knew exactly what happened to Elijah Jenkins and Amber Miller, those two individuals charged with kidnapping. What was that situation all about? And what about the property search? Were those connected at all? And how did Jeanette get wrapped up with all of it?
The one guy that I'm pretty sure has something to do with it, he, you know, was making death threats at her, at me, that place in Newark. She told me that was the first place. Like, she felt like something bad was going to happen. She got wrapped up in, you know, wrong people because, you know, her trying to help. And,
How so? What do you mean?
Like, she'd feel bad for, like, you know, people that were drug addicts and everything.
Is there a lot of that here?
Yeah. I didn't realize how bad it was until, like, you know, I started actually, like, seeing it.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's real rough, especially, like, you know, getting it over that way. It's real bad. But, like, heroin and everything.
In this town?
Not in this town, like, in Wolkett, like, area. That's where it's, like, the worst.
Is that close to here?
Yeah, it's, like, 15 minutes away.
So she had a lot of friends that kind of got mixed up with that?
Yeah.
Was she kind of ever involved as well?
Yeah. Like, I didn't know until later. Like, it was, like, she wasn't, for, like, the first couple months, me and her were dating, but then she kind of, like, somehow got tricked into it and then got hooked. And she got clean. And then I think she got hooked again. And then I got her clean again. And then a month later, like, it was like she was really clean for an entire month. And then, you know.
Whenever you said you were talking about the guy, the situation that happened in February, you kind of did a head nod. Does he live close to here?
No.
The guy that we continue to mention here is the guy that was a part of that kidnapping charge, Elijah Jenkins. The property referenced in Newark is the 50 acres off of Bloom Road, so it does seem that they were connected in some way.
I know him of him being around Newark area. That's how I like, you know, where I know. I don't think he even has a house. He just kind of stays wherever. He doesn't even have vehicles, so it's like any rides that you get, it'd be from somebody else. And some of the characters that I have met through her, she wanted me to get faces, you know, because she knew these people were bad people. And me and her plan on taking them down regardless, because they're just bad people. And I'm wondering if maybe they caught wind of it, or...
What do you mean by taking them down?
Like, you know, like, trying to get as much evidence as we could to get into the cops.
Of the drug situation?
Yeah.
Because she didn't want to be a part of it?
No.
Okay, so she was here, and then had your iPad.
Yeah. Because
her phone was broken, right?
Yeah. Every time she'd try to get away, somehow, some way, that's part of the reason why she didn't have a phone, because the guy would blow her phone up, so I broke it in half. And she'd get all upset, because, you know, like, she'd be like, I have to go, and I'd be like, no, you don't. Let him come here. Like, you know,
What did they want from her?
I don't know. Her help, I guess. I'm not really sure. She didn't tell me everything. She didn't like tell me, she didn't want to have me have too much information, because I feel like she was worried about my own safety. Because he knew that, you know, I'm a first responder, I'm in the fire department, like, you know, I have ends all over the place. So he knew about it. So I'm wondering if that's like part of the reason. But I feel like she was almost living a double life out of it that I didn't know about. As I've heard things just like coming together, it just sounds like it. I know she loves me. I know that for a fact. But I feel like she got wrapped up in stuff and just couldn't get out of it. Part of me hopes that she just ran away to hide, but I know that's not true. And if, you know, if she did, she would have contacted her mother or daughter by now. Like,
and you're sure she hasn't done that?
I know for a fact. I mean, I talk to them, like, you know, at least once or twice a month. They come over and just randomly just pick up to make sure I'm okay. They're good people. I don't know. I could have a whole bunch of, like, you know, theories of what I think happened and, like, all the coincidences that she would say, and they were all tied to that guy, like, you know, the death threats and everything on her and me and her daughter. And she told me, you know, if she ever disappeared, that this house in New York was the first spot to love.
Did that happen pretty soon in the relationship when she told you that, or?
No, it was more or less, like, the month that everything just went quiet and everything, we were finally, like, able to, like, live our life. And we finally got everything worked out, and then all of a sudden, you know.
So why did she tell you that if she ever went missing? Did that come up because of something that she was telling you about this guy making threats? Because
she just, like, things that she'd seen him do to people, like, you know.
Like, bad?
Yeah. He beat up an old woman, like a woman that was probably like 40, 50 years old for $40.
Did the woman ever speak up about it?
No.
Why? What does this guy have on anybody?
Nothing. He's just a scumbag. But he's got so many people so scared that they're afraid to say something. The one day he held her for like 2-3 hours, not letting her go because she never really gave me a full-on reason, but pretty sure it was because of drugs or something.
He held her?
Yeah, like, wouldn't let her leave, like, this house of mine. Well, they were in jail, and now I guess, well, she got out. I think she, like, you know, spilled some beans on him, but he got out last month, so God knows wherever he's at now.
So he's free?
Yeah.
And they don't have anything else about her?
And they couldn't find him. It took me literally 2 days. The cops were looking for him to question him, and I'm the kind of guy that can work both, you know, underground and, you know, the good guy side, and I used my resources, and I tracked him down, and all the cops, I waited outside his house the house he was staying at for 2 days. I see him peeking out the windows, looking at it because he knows my cut. I was just waiting. I didn't sleep for 2 weeks.
So you're not scared of him?
No. But he knows that because I told him the one time, the one and only time I met him, I said, "You f*** with me, my family, my girlfriend, I will kill you." I threatened him. I told him I will split your throat ear to ear. Don't care. Like, because you're a piece of garbage. You know, I called the cops, and I'm just like, don't you guys, like, this is literally what probably happened. Like, this has got to help me somehow be able to find Jeanette.
If you think he's responsible, do you have a theory?
I have two separate theories, kind of. Well, almost three. Either A, killed her. B, he gave her bad drugs and she overdosed. Or C, sold her to the human trafficking.
Marcus had a lot of people messaging him that Elijah was involved with sex trafficking, but without proof of any of these allegations, it was impossible to pursue any of these leads on his own, so he reported them to investigators as he should have.
But I'm more leaning on the first two because I feel like if she was still alive, she would have found a way. I mean, she was smart. She knows, I mean, she's a fighter, like, she would have found a way to get a hold of somebody by now. And if not that, she ran away and was so scared that she'd hide in front of everybody. But I doubt that's the case either.
Since he's so good at holding people, I mean, do you think there's a chance that he's somehow still holding her?
I don't know. I don't know enough about his bad side, but I know that he's done it a lot. I've heard from other people, and that, you know, Jeanette's told me, like, you know, before, that's kind of what he would do.
Do you think there's still a chance at all that she left on her own will?
I believe that initially she probably left on her own will. Like I said, I'm pretty sure that somebody came by and, you know, somebody she knew, thought was her friend, he probably paid off with drugs or something and said, "Hey, I'll give you this if you get her." Like, that's what I feel like.
You don't think she intentionally left this house that day knowing that she wasn't going to come back?
No. Like, she, it was cold. I mean, it was November, the end of November. It was cold out. She would have brought more than just jeans, semi, like, it wasn't a thick jacket or anything. But.
And you know she hasn't been back here?
No, because I changed locks and everything just because of that, you know?
So you don't think anyone's tried to break in here since then?
No.
And that's good.
I mean, I don't think nobody's stupid enough to try to break into my house. Make my day. That's one thing my mom was worried about. She's like, if you think that they're watching you, this, that, and anything else, I'm like, let them watch. I'm like, let them try something, because you know what? At the end of the day, they can get their little group. I got a whole bunch of good old boys here that are just willing to, like, come down with pistols and shotguns. They're all right around me, too. I make one phone call, and it's like a chain reaction. I have 15 people standing on my front step waiting. I feel safe.
Do you know, other than that guy, if they have any other suspects?
No.
At the time of this episode's release, February of 2022, Elijah Jenkins is currently in custody, serving a 10-year sentence as an inmate at the Elmira Correctional Facility for robbery charges. That's right, robbery, not kidnapping. Needless to say, I had quite a bit of questions about this for investigators, but before moving on to them, I still had a few more questions for Marcus. How exactly was Elijah connected to that property if he wasn't the owner? And it was unclear from the media whether or not Jeanette owned a car at the time of her disappearance. Did she have a car? And if so, what happened to it?
Why was the property that the police searched, the place that she named as the spot to look?
Because it's 58. The guy's got like 50 acres of land.
It's his property.
Not his. It's like that was his trap house. It was somebody else's where he kept all his stuff, I guess. From what I gather, I know.
Does he know the people who own the property?
Yeah.
So that was another thing, like, that was so weird in the media. Like, it almost seemed like the sweet old couple that lived on the property had no idea what was going on.
They did.
But you would have had to. Yeah. I mean, if her regardless.
There, like, because I didn't know this, but she had, like, I guess she must have been in debt to the guy. I didn't know about it.
The guy making the threats, or the guy who owned the property?
The guy making the threats. Because she told me that her car was in storage, and they found her car on that property. They must have used it as a drug car.
The police found her car there?
Yeah. I mean, they spent a while there, and they told me the only thing they found was her car. And they asked me if I knew about it, and I said, no, I didn't. Like, you know, she told me it was in storage.
What did they do with the car? You know,
it's still over, it's right across the bridge, you know, fire hall, like where they park their squad cars. There's a fenced in area, it's still fenced in over there.
So they just took it?
Yeah.
Did they try and get prints?
I don't know.
This was huge. They found her car on that property, and this is the first time anyone's hearing about it? Why?
The only reason why I found out they found the car was because I was actually doing work at the police garage for my company, and I happened to look around the corner where the fence area is, and I see the blue car, and I recognized it right away.
Wait, they didn't tell you that that's where they found the car?
No.
What?
Yeah. They didn't tell me they found the car. No.
How do you know for sure that that's where they found it then?
Because I asked.
Oh, what? Why?
Like, something's fishy.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, especially like releasing, okay, we searched the property, didn't find anything.
And I don't even think they told the news or anything.
No, because the stories about it don't say anything about finding the car.
Yeah. Because her car wasn't registered or insured or anything, and that's why I'm pretty sure she was just...
But you know that that's the car.
Oh, yeah, no, for a fact, because she had crashed it and the front end damaged the exact same. Yeah, it's got Colorado.
Who told you that that's where they found the car?
The PD did, after I called him out on it. Like, where did
the Clyde?
Yeah.
PD?
I'm like, where did you guys find your car? Because it wasn't shortly after, you know, that I was doing work. I don't know why my boss sent me down there, because he already knew that I was all sorts of pissed off with it. But I mean, I don't know why they did it in the first place. Because I gave them, like, they asked if I had anything with, like, VIN numbers and their name and everything on, and I had the registration and everything. And it's the last I knew about it. They didn't tell me they found their car or anything. I gave them everything that I could find about that car. Gave it to them. So that way, and I know for a fact it's that her car.
What kind of car was it?
It was a Civic. Like blue. And I don't know if it's because it was an open case and they didn't want people to know about it, but I feel like that's kind of important.
Yeah, it was definitely important. This was just crazy to me. So much so that before leaving Marcus's house, I asked him to point me in the direction of where he discovered her car. I needed to see this for myself.
It's still in, where Clyde parks her cars at the garage. It's still in the Preston area.
There, I think I'd say it's building right there from that scene.
Okay, so we're pulled into the lot right now, and yep, there's the car, just like Marcus said.
Hi, Amanda. It's Kevin Coons, detective over at the Sheriff's Office in Wayne County.
That's next time on Unconvicted. This podcast is actively being produced at the time of its release, which means new information is being added daily. If you know anything regarding the disappearance of Jeanette Sierra Mella, please contact the Wayne County Sheriff's Department at 315-946-9711 or Clyde PD at 315-923-3121. If you have any information relevant to Jeanette's case or the things discussed on this podcast and would like to share for future episodes, you can find links to our social media and contact info in the show notes, as well as photos and links to our sources. Unconvicted is written, recorded, edited, and produced by me, Amanda Vreeland. Thank you for listening.